The information provided on Dr. Tom Rozelle Live by Dr. Tom Rozelle, D.C., interview guests, show co-hosts, or substitute hosts is not intended or implied to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. It is for general information purposes only. Information from this broadcast should not replace the appropriate consultation and examination process by a licensed physician. Always consult your own physician prior to changing any current medical directive or prescription.
And good afternoon and welcome to the Dr. Tom Rozelle Live Show. We are live talking about different healthcare issues, how we naturally deal with them, different ways to look at common conditions. And as Dr. Rozelle says, you've tried, you applied, and you're looking for those other ways to kind of help you naturally. Filling in, obviously, for Dr. Rozelle today, he must have taken a holiday off, that must be it, is me, Dr. Stephanie Pina, licensed naturopath and acupuncturist at the Rozelle Center for Healing. And of course, every time I fill in and we have a lecture topic, we always have to have a guest. My guest today is going to be talking with me about a topic that we end up, I would say, talking with patients and the public on almost every single day because it's so important to a lot of different aspects in healthcare. But joining me today is going to be Dr. Scott Lamp, chiropractic, and also another member of the team at the Rozelle Center for Healing. Dr. Lamp, good morning, afternoon.
Good morning, and good afternoon this Easter. Seems like a very nice day out there.
It's Easter Sunday. It's nice if you're...
Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say, if you get a chance after this, you got to go outside and get some of that sunshine in before the Virginia weather either goes cold again and we have a snowstorm or we get an 80-degree temperature change. So.
Yeah, it's a great one to talk and reference our topic being hypertension. It's like you can go out for a nice walk and hopefully the weather will cooperate and you can actually relax down and, get back to some healing there.
Right. So as we mentioned really briefly, our topic today is going to be hypertension. And this is going to lead into, obviously, this Wednesday, April the 20th. We're getting through April very quickly. At 7 p.m., the lecture that Dr. Lamp's going to be having at the Rozelle Center for Healing, and it's titled The Natural Approaches to High Blood Pressure. So if you are interested, you've got a couple different ways to communicate with us right now. Feel free to give us a live phone call at our studio number, 888-630-9625. Again, that's 888-630-9625. And if you're interested in this Wednesday's lecture, feel free to either register online at rozellecare.com. You click on the link about halfway down. And you can also call the office at 703-698-7117. We'll repeat that again later on. But now we got to get into the topic at hand. And basically, we want to talk about what is the importance with blood pressure and why should people be, more concerned about it now versus ever. Dr. Lamp?
Well, first off, it's one of the major illnesses that we have to deal with, and it's one of the leading causes of death right there. You're going to be cardiovascular disease is one of the leading causes of death, and hypertension is part of those things and really makes it very well complicated. You know, we deal with probably roughly about 70 million people. That's the last time I've looked, and you talk about bringing it up to date. I think with COVID and the stresses and everything else we've had, that number is going to be skyrocketing a little bit more. Haven't gotten the full data in that fully yet, but as we recover fully from this COVID, if we ever fully recover from it, we're going to see a lot more hypertension problems associated with the stress, just the stress alone with it, and also related to the disease itself. But roughly right now, we're looking at about 1 out of 3 people have hypertension. And about 52% roughly to 55% are the ones that seek treatment, and there's a lot of that stuff that's hidden out there. And, this is an industry that's about $320 billion a year, and again, that's going to be past costs. I'm sure that's going to be a lot higher from going forward. So you got some of these things. It's the leading, one of the leading causes of hypertension is also one of the leading causes for cardiovascular disease in worldwide. And I think it's one of the things, it's a major complication dealing with diabetes, which is another major disease process that we're having. And then there's a lot of silent killer problems in dealing with strokes and things that might be associated. So that's why we really have to take a really hard look at this thing.
Now, I think the interesting thing is most people probably have heard of high blood pressure or hypertension. And at the same time too, and I don't know if you'll cover this at all during your lecture on Wednesday, we also have a little issue with hypotension and the different types of balances back and forth that we think we're in good shape because it's too low, but maybe not. But really, let's go back to the basic explanation of what they're looking for when you're going into a doctor's office, you know, whether it's our office or another office. And nowadays, you know, I mean, blood pressure readings are a vital sign. So a lot of different doctors, my eye doctor took my blood pressure when I came in. I had to show him how to put the cuff on, but that's okay. But essentially,
that's a big point right there.
That's it's a just big like, point. We're gonna get back to that. That's one of my pet peeves with. And I said people can help themselves a little bit too, especially if they're monitoring at home. But what are we looking at when we look at numbers? Because there's the numbers, the systolic and the diastolic that we look at. What does that mean? But also, what are some of the things that we look at in a slightly different way than, say, your regular primary care office would look at? Because that helps us differentiate what might be going on in the body, but also how to treat it correctly.
Yes, it's really kind of using the signs and symptoms of the body to really give a good check of that. One of the things is systolic. So you have systolic and diastolic. Systolic is the first number. It's blood pressure that indicates how much pressure the blood is exerting against the arterial walls, the ventricles of the heart pushing out when the heart beats, pumping blood out. And that's what it is. So systolic pressure is the top number. And that's what the reading is. And the reading, it can be anywhere from like, 120 over 80 is the common one. So, oh, that's great. That's the one you want to be to, or maybe just slightly under that number. When we're looking at things getting abnormal on that number, it's usually what they call high stage number one is considered 130 to 139. Not necessarily recommended from medication, so it could be, but lifestyle changes. And then when you get over that number, when you get over like over 140, then generally you're going to be highly recommended for medication from the medical side of things. Now, diastolic is the lower number, and it's between each heartbeat. Your heart rests so it can fill with more blood in the atrium, and that's the number that you're getting. That number usually is around 80. The diastolic high stage one would be like 80 to 89. Again, maybe not getting medications, but they're going to be like, maybe something might be needed here. And high stage two, they're definitely going to be suggesting medication for over 90. And then you've got crisis numbers, which is like if you're under over 180 on your systolic and your diastolic is under 120 or your diastolic is over 120, those are deadly significant numbers and they'll cause alarm in the doctor's eyes.
So when we look at those numbers, it's, you know, we look at both of them and then we look at it a couple of different ways. But one of the big questions, if someone wasn't used to this, is that, well, which one's the important one? And it's really both, correct?
Yeah, it's really both. And not only that, I like to think of something called pulse pressure. And that's the number between, you subtract the systolic from the diastolic. For example, the normal is 120 to over 80. That's a 40-point differential. But what happens if those numbers are closer? Like maybe there's only a 30-point differential or a 20-point differential. But even though the numbers look good, it's still not right. Or if the number's like, okay, maybe it's a 60-point differential. Those are other numbers you want to take a look at because one has to be basically when you're under 40, the body's working harder and it's not, the blood isn't sufficient. And on the other side of things, you've got a stress mechanism that's going on, which can come from a lot of different places.
So, yeah, so when we look at this, and we do something a little bit different in the office as well, too, because we don't just measure one, you know, usually the left arm and stuff. Like, you know, right. You go into a doctor's office, and unfortunately nowadays what I'm noticing is they're using more of the automated cuffs, which are very difficult to calibrate. My pet peeve is always, I guess thanks to COVID, all the pharmacies have had to shut down their little automated blood pressure machines because every kid plays with those. And so you're never going to get a correct number on those. But we look at it a little bit different as far as what we do, even for the patient coming in for the very first time, no matter who they are, because we want to see what their blood pressure has to do in different positions. And really the only time you might see that is with the cardiologist once you're well into treatment and they're monitoring it for slightly different reasons, like how their medication may be doing, what's the next procedure. So can you explain a little bit what we do in the office as far as that first patient comes in and how we get initial numbers? Because I think it's very interesting for patients to understand when they come into the office or they're trying to see, you know, do I have high blood pressure to begin with? Is it just white coat syndrome? Am I just nervous? There's ways that we try to figure things out a little bit differently than others.
Yeah, there's a test called the Raglan's test, R-A-G-L-A-N-D-S, if you want to look it up. And it's a test in actually three different positions. You want to think about blood pressure, kind of think of it like a pen. You know, you got a pen. If I hold a pen upside down and I'm trying to get ink and I'm holding it upside down, I'm trying to write on the ceiling, for example, and the ink has to get up. It has to have more pressure to get ink to the head of that pen to write up on that ceiling. So when we put the body in different positions, it's kind of the same type of thing. When we lay down, the first test, the first thing we do is a sitting blood pressure, which is our normal 120 over 80 that we're looking for and the variations to that. But then we lay you down on your back and you're laying flat, arms to your side. And what we're looking for is the blood pressure to go down because there's not so much pressure on the body to put that blood flow, in this case, to the head, as an example of the pen. And it should actually be a lower number than the actual number from sitting. And that actually gives us an idea about how your kidneys are functioning. Now, from that position, you immediately go into a standing position. So it's changed the pressure of the blood flow to the brain. It's going to be a lot harder for the blood to get to the brain. So there's certain organ systems that come into play that help the heart move the blood farther up to the brain. And we call that the adrenal gland. And the adrenal gland says, okay, we're going to try, we sense a movement in our environment. The body, now the head's all the way to the standing position. That's the highest position. So we're going to have to work harder, and we should see the blood pressure go up about 9 to 10 points. What happens is stress mechanisms or the effect of stress in the body, we'll see sometimes the number go down as compared to what it would be sitting position, and even go even farther down, even lower than the laying position. That's usually a very a strong indicator of a stress reaction that's going on. But if we've got ones that are just staying the same, if it stays the same, that's still not good. It should show a difference between from a, like a laying position to a standing position. So this will come in some insights to what we're looking at. And again, it's something that works well. I think going back, I think Stephanie, we were talking about taking the pressure the right way is really, really important. And I think when we're taking it in that direction, even when you're sitting or coming in and doing a blood test or blood pressure check, you should be calm. You shouldn't be rushing in. Is the room cold? All these things can have an effect on your blood pressure and artificially bring it up. And I think a lot of times people come rushing in. We got, who knows, you know how the traffic situation is around this area. And how bad that can actually raise people's temperature just coming in, or if you're late getting to a patient, let's say in your doctor's office, and they're not right on time, and you're a little bit, got a little bit of anger towards that, that could raise your temperature, or not your temperature, but your blood pressure, in not necessarily a very good way. So you want to be able to take it correctly. You also want to make sure that the cuff is put on, like you were talking about having a problem with, and making sure the arm is at the level of the heart. And if it's not, you can get bad readings. The cuff size could be wrong. That could play a problem with it. So you want to make sure you get a good blood pressure to start off with, and maybe the right environment to get that done. So, I mean, Stephanie, I think I'm going to hit a couple other points if that's okay with you. In regards to when we're taking the blood pressures, you should probably look at three times to diagnose a hyper or hypo blood pressure problem. And you probably would like to do it over a 2-week period at different time intervals. And do you have it in the morning, or does it sometime midday or at the end of the day? And sometimes we don't see that in the medical model very much at all. And that'll give us an aspect of what really is the blood pressure, or are you just doing it by an environmental input?
All right. Well, we're going to be right back in just a moment. And we're talking with Dr. Scott Lamp about natural approaches to high blood pressure and high blood tension on the Rizal Center for Healing.
The Vince Coloney Show.
Weekday afternoons, 3 to 6.
On News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
Making sense of the news.
And welcome back to Dr. Tom Rizal Live. This is us live, sort of in the studio, but we're here to take your calls on the topic that we're talking about today. I am with Dr. Scott Lamp. I'm Dr. Stephanie Pina. And we're talking about blood pressure and how important it is to not only have it monitored and to work, think about how it can be treated more naturally, but also how it connects to the other parts of our body and to other healthcare conditions as well, too. So Dr. Lamp is going to be your presenter this Wednesday night, April the 20th at 7 p.m. at the Rizal Center for Healing, talking about this particular issue. And if you're interested in registering for that class, we want to make sure we've got your seat waiting for you when you get there. So there's two ways to do that. One, you can go to our website, www.roselecare.com, roselecare.com. Go about halfway down the page where you see the nice little visual that says high blood pressure, and you can click on to register there and someone will confirm your spot. And then you can also call us at the office and tell them you want to make sure that you have your spot ready for this very, very important topic for this Wednesday night at 7 p.m. on the 20th. And our phone number there is 703-698-7117. Again, that's 703-698-7117. And hopefully you're having a great Sunday, but we're going to keep talking about high blood pressure. Dr. Lamp, please explain to me how chiropractors and how, say, adjustments and the things that we do in the office affects blood pressure, because if I didn't know any better, I would think I have to see my primary care doctor, and they're going to be the only one, or a cardiologist, and they're the only ones that's going to be able to diagnose it and deal with it. So how do we look at it from our triad of health stage, and what does a chiropractor have to do with hypertension?
Okay, well, let's talk a couple things. There was an interesting article, if you go to PubMed, or not PubMed, but WebMD, there is an article that was brought up, I think it was Dr. Yates. He's talking about adjusting, or actually as a chiropractor, we work on repositioning and alignment parts of the spine, especially the upper part. There's a vertebra, you have 7 cervical vertebra, that means on the neck itself. And the upper two, there's the atlas and axis, and having a adjusting and a repositioning of that seems to have some definite benefits from the small study he was doing that actually dropped blood pressure by up to maybe 14 points in systolic, maybe even some more so. The reason being is that the nervous system, the nervous system kind of runs the whole show, and you have something called an autonomic nervous system. It's automatically there. You've heard of things like flight or flight, rest and digest, the sympathetic and parasympathetic nervous system, and it runs something off the vagus nerve. And Tom talks about this on probably almost every show. And the vagus nerve is important because it coordinates us running away from something. So when we see some danger or some type of stressful situation that's happening in our body, the body is going to orchestrate and say, okay, these organs are going to turn on, and these organs are going to get better blood flow, and the other ones are going to be restricted, because if I see something danger and I have to run away, I'm going to put some blood flow to my arms and legs so I can get out of there. But I don't really use digestive organs. I'm not using my reproductive organs very much. So that can be switched off. So this is actually has a strong reaction on the heart itself. And that's one particular nerve area, the autonomic nervous system, that's extremely important. So if I have bad positions with my body, if I'm sitting on slouching over on a laptop at home because now I've gone from COVID from the office to home and I don't have a good ergonomic setup, that can create some problems. And that's not the only area. We have autonomic ailments, that especially in the cranial and the upper neck area, and then in the lower back or the sacrum or the pelvis. These can have an effect on the parasympathetic areas, and then the nerves for the sympathetic areas are actually in kind of like where your rib cage area is at. So all these places can actually get a hiccup if a structural problem happens, and now I'm putting stress on that system. So that can play a part there. Directly nerves to the heart too, you've got in the upper part of your thoracic spine, you have what they call T1, T2. There's 12 of them. They match with the ribs. And each one of those first two have to do with the coronary arteries. And then you've got nerves related to the diaphragm, and you have the phrenic nerve and the splenic nerves all have a relationship to the diaphragm and back to the heart again. So those are things that have nerve endings that go back to the spine that can be interrupted by adding some spinal problems or something that might get in the way, or entrapment or irritation of those lines can cause a problem for the blood pressure.
Well, and we even think about it too, even if someone was coming in because they just had general pain management and need to be adjusted, and, you know, they've got tennis elbow or something like that. If that pain's high enough, it can raise blood pressure as a red flag saying something's wrong with me right now. Or we see, issues with, there being, you know, too much blood flow or not enough blood flow going to the kidney and the liver, like their own versions of blood pressure issues in there too. So we got to look at the whole body and how it responds as well too. So, and that really does go into that triad of health, understanding how biologically, structurally, and chemically, mental, emotionally, we look at things and we have to look at things. It's just not done that way that much. So we're going to go to a break real quick, and essentially we're going to talk about blood pressure, and we are going to be back with Dr. Lamp on the Dr. Tom Rozelle Live Show.
Dr. Tom Rozelle Live continues now on News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
And welcome back to Dr. Tom Rozelle Live. I am with Dr. Scott Lamp, a chiropractor at the Rozelle Center for Healing, and your guest lecturer this Wednesday night, April the 20th at 7 p.m. at the Rozelle Center for Healing in Fairfax, Virginia. And we are talking about a hot topic that is a good thing to talk about multiple times because it affects so many of us in so many different ways. And there's a good chance, in fact, it's as much as one out of three people have issues with high blood pressure or hypertension. And there is a way that we can do this without having to worry about drugs and surgery, but we got to look at things a little bit differently. So Dr. Lamb's going to be covering quite a few things in this Wednesday's lecture. So make sure you register either by the website or by calling in the office to reserve your spot, because I have a feeling, just like Dr. Lamp's last lecture, it's going to get crowded. So we're going to do everything to keep it nice and safe in the office and make sure that you get your questions answered and go from there. Now, Dr. Lamp, when we started to talk about blood pressure, we kind of, and on the side notes, we've been talking about how it affects so many different aspects of different illnesses and conditions and diseases. And we're going to go into a pretty solid list of how it can do that. But when we think about blood pressure, we got to think about the heart, the arteries and the veins, the blood, all the aspects of what's going on there instead of just the pressure itself. So when we think about those aspects of there, what do we see affected in the, as far as the vascular system having ways we can change it essentially?
Well, I think a lot of things that we can modify, there's a pretty big list that go through. One is going to be when we have hyperlipidemia or dyslipidemia, which is basically too much lipids or cholesterol that's building up, and that's the body's fighting back to kind of heal the body up, and that's where sometimes your plaquing can come up there. That's going to add to some resistance. You know, the body's got to push against some places, and sometimes it gets more resistance, so blood pressure can be higher because of what happens in the lipid element. Hyperglycemia, again, diabetes is also generally associated with a lot of heart disease and hypertension. Metabolic syndrome plays in that. Insulin resistance plays a part in that. And what's interesting, even when you have something like insulin resistance, you also have potassium resistance. And as you know, with potassium actually is another one that kind of helps lower blood pressure. But if you're lacking in it, you can't get it into the cell, then you're going to have some problems with high blood pressure that's there. And then we got things like obesity. Again, there could be high lipids associated with that. You got a higher volume, like the body needs to get oxygen to the tissues. The tissues need to be feeding the body. And now that's being restricted because now I have larger, so to speak, tracts or volumes to feed. And I have to do it at a higher rate to make sure everybody's fed well. So obesity plays a part with that. And then another one of these ones here is smoking. Smoking has a tendency to restrict the vasoconstriction, again, more resistance, and the body has to push in it. So it's a volume, it's a really an aspect of volume, of how much volume I have to deal with or how much restriction I'm dealing with.
And I always like to throw out for the women, especially when we think about pregnant women, I mean, checking blood pressures is one of the main things they'll do to make sure that preeclampsia doesn't become an issue as well, yep, too, and put not only absolutely the health of the mom, but the baby at risk as well, too. And they'll kind of come up with some drastic measures if they start to see trends and stuff in there too. So it really sounds like blood pressure is more than just your blood pressure.
Right.
Exactly. It really is how it affects everything else in the body. And that's the way we have to think about it.
Well, I think, I mean, you know, continue going down the list. We have like hyperuremia, and urea is something that comes from the production from the kidney, trying to get the waste product out. And that builds up. That's another toxic element that can actually push and create some problems with the body trying to push it out and sensing the problems. There's a chemical signal that happens. Renal disease, Various type of kidney diseases can be a problem. You can even have arterial narrowing that's harder for things to push. But remember, as you put fluid into a system or a tank, the fluid has to go out the other direction. That's what the kidney does. And so problems with the kidney can play a big part with that. Elevated things in fibrinogen, and that's how the body actually works with some clotting factors and putting things in. Is there some clotting aspects that are causing some problems there? Elevated serum iron. Iron can be toxic if it's high, and so it's not very good for the heart. So there's some side notes that happen to that to create some hypertension there too. Trans fatty acids and refined carbohydrates, just taking those in over a period of time is one of the reasons why we have a breakdown in some of our arteries. Some of the toxins that get into the arterial walls that create problems, or some of those are there. And then also on the other side, those are high. The low side would be like low dietary omega-3 fatty acids. You know, I think we talked about, you know, I always go to blue zones here, Stephanie. You know that, right?
And I think you want to live in a blue zone. I want to live in a blue zone. Send you to a blue zone to do research and do the radio station from there.
I want to go to Sardinia, Italy. That's where the longest living males are living. And they have a very high, what they call omega-3 to omega-6 ratio. And think about oils. Oils are slippery. They're actually keep things from, it keeps the connections on the brain. I mean, a brain is like 50% fat anyway. It's a way to feed that, to rebuild with it. It helps with, again, like slippery substances to make sure things don't get rigid and tight, especially even in the brain itself. It actually protects against concussions and things of that nature. But also you want flexibility. And if you don't have flexibility, let's say in arteries, that's a problem.
So you're mentioning some really interesting things and different conditions that really have to do, too, with what we're actually processing through the blood. So. Right. When we talk about blood pressure and, like I said, the different parts of it, the blood that needs to move throughout to bring good nutrients and take away inflammation, stuff like that in itself is something we have to consider and can have an effect, because a lot of the medications that, say, people are on for blood pressure can affect that balance as well, too. So we have to affect it, and we have to take that in consideration in what we do as well if someone comes in on blood pressure medications as well. Let's talk about those little components of blood. And you were mentioning the omegas and having good fats and kind of moving in there. But what other aspects are really important that would affect blood pressure that are actual physical components of blood itself?
Well, I mean, you've got to actually give oxygen. So oxygen is going to be put in there. So there's demand. You have to run some of the energy cycles have to run. We need to have oxygen, of course, nutrition also. You know, you're supplying nutrients such as sugar, proper sugar, glucose, amino acids and fatty acids that need to be there, proteins to build up structural pieces, glucose or sugar to be running it correctly, or they have the energy cycle of it. Removing of toxic wastes. When we breathe in and breathe out, can we get the CO2 out? Or if we're not, we're going to keep the body to be more acidic. The body becomes more acidic, then basically the body becomes more inflamed and breaks down easier. And that's not necessarily good for a lot of different reasons, even cancer to some extent. Lactic acid, to get rid of the lactic acid, that can be our soreness in the muscle after exercise. Immunological functions too, the detection of foreign materials by antibodies. The blood flow helps us do that. And is that working or not? And again, if we take a medication to drop that down, these start to suffer. So a lot of the problem, the hypertension is more or less of a thing of it might be a sign, but it's our adaptation that's causing our blood pressure to go up. Is we got to look at what the adaptation problem is. That's going to cause the hypertension, because if we just take something and lower the blood pressure, what are we really doing to take care of the cause? I don't think we're doing a good job of that if we're just going to throw medications at it. Now,
one of the things with that, too, as far as adaptation, is a lot of the times when you think about it, we can see blood pressures very, very quickly, right? You run around the block, yep, your blood pressure can change, right? So your body doesn't have to necessarily adapt to a major stress if you all of a sudden have to kick up blood pressure to exercise. But when it starts to maintain or doesn't start to come down or get too infrequent, right, and up and down and all over the place, you know, that's that red sign, that red flag where you're like, there's something else going on here that you need to like pay attention to in order to, you know, we investigate a little bit deeper, because this has been going on for weeks and months and there's potentially more of an issue. And that's where some of those major things that you just said on the list can really start kind of kicking in.
Yeah, and I think the thing is that's why you only would get a really good blood pressure done the right way. And like I said, when you go in, you sit down, are you in a hurry or a rush or you're angry at something? Deep breathing, which is like, it's one of the things we're going to be talking about in the class, is cognitive behavioral therapy. It's one of the best things is learn how to deep breathe. And there's actually new devices out there we'll talk about, like I said, in the class on Wednesday, that give you some things to actually control your blood pressure by simply learning how to breathe correctly. And then get yourself calm and then get the blood pressure taken to see what it is. And that's why you want to do like three separate occasions, so it's not a fluke at the one time you're seeing it. So,
well, and I think one of the interesting, interesting things that you bring up is when we go into, as a patient, when we go into the office and we are, maybe we're not the one rushing either, right? Maybe we come in and we're having the best day ever and we sit down, but all of a sudden they throw the blood pressure cuff on really quickly. We can actually advocate for ourselves and says, you know, can we take a moment and give me a second to do this? Or I have patients who have issues with, maybe they had breast cancer in the past or lymphedema, so they have to tell whoever's doing it, I can't do it on this one arm. Can you choose the other one? Or, hey, can you see what my blood pressure is like on both arms in case there's a difference? Because there's a whole nother area of interest to go into is when you have blood pressure problems on either sides. And if they're doing things like pulse ox or heart rate monitoring at the same time too, what are we doing when we put all that information together? So patients can really advocate when it comes to hypertension monitoring. And I think that's where when they're going home as well too, we need to kind of come up with that list and says, okay, I want you to do this at the same time, every single time, or there are reasons why we'd have you do an AM one or a PM one because we want different bits of information, or when you're having symptoms and you don't feel good, take a blood pressure reading. People don't necessarily like to do that, but those are all little things that someone can do on their own to advocate that they're getting the correct measurements at the right time and at the right moments as well too. So it all definitely takes into consideration. And with the blood aspects as well too, I mean, when you think about it, you've got water and electrolytes and protein in there. So if we don't have water and electrolytes and proteins going into the body, then we've got a problem. So we always talk about hydration issues all the time. And what's one of the medications that treats high blood pressure is one that gets rid of excess water. So making sure we're hydrated on a good state as well too. So.
Yeah. And then things like regulating your pH and regulating the core body temperature, that's all going to be blood flow. And even also too, when you're talking about taking an AM or the PM, I mean, there's a 10% possible decrease or increase because of circadian rhythms with the heart a little bit too. So there's some things that play a part there. So really knowing your body, but also taking sake of like, hey, can I have 5 minutes and just relax here for me a second? And then can I take the blood pressure then? And that would be a good way to do that. Because again, if you're going to be exercising, the blood pressure is going to go up. I mean, it's a natural
form.
That's what we want to do. So we don't want to mix with what we want with what's not supposed to be normal. So that's a good point. I mean, you know, hormones and everything else, it's signaling of tissue damage. All this stuff is done in the blood, and you want to make sure you really get a good blood number.
So we tend to look at that a little bit differently in the office. And the great thing is you can go home and send a patient home with homework to monitor it, to give us, you know, what are they like when they're at home? And I mean, our really bad joke is when people come in, they say they get white coat syndrome and they get nervous because that's why we're wearing black scrubs, right? So like we take the white coat syndrome, the white out of the white coat syndrome. But a lot of the times, you know, patients are coming in and all they've been given is numbers. And, you know, even that can scare them enough. Like we've got patients who are afraid to even have the blood pressure cuff put on them because they've been told all the time, now you're just going to have to go to one medication or another. So with the prevalence of there being so many different types of classes of medications out there, how does more of a natural approach, say, work on its own at the beginning, but then how does it also work with someone who's already medicated?
Well, I think the thing is trying to work with the medical doctor to some extent and say, okay, here's our plan. What we're going to try to do, if we start changing the dietary aspects, if we try getting some exercise in, if we do these things that are going to be important, and we'll go into more details at the class, and we start seeing the blood pressure lowering, you start measuring the blood pressure. If it starts to lower, you have a reason to ask your doctor, can I get off those medications? You start proving to the point we're actually making the medication work too well. One of the things, too, is to take a look at is, and also when you get onto this pill regime, one of the problems being is if I want to start lowering the blood pressure, then what's going to happen? The body still needs to have those demands met. And then a typical finding is that, okay, if I'm not getting demands met, what do you think is going to happen to your energy? your fatigue starts to start to develop. And because you're not getting fed by the system, because we're depressing everything because of the symptom we're looking at, and say, well, we'll drop it down, we're going to be a hero and get the blood pressure right. And then we find out we've got other things that start happening along the way. Another one, too, is we get fluid collection in the legs. You can get fluids that now I can't get the heart pumping the fluid all the way up. We're slowing it down. Now the fluid becomes dependent and goes down lower, and it goes down in the feet. And then you get some swelling. And then you were talking about before using a diuretic. But then when you use the diuretic, then you start spilling potassium, which has a tendency to have an effect on blood pressure. If you're not there, it can actually make it worse. So you need to put a potassium pill. And then all of a sudden, a statin drug. And then all of a sudden, now I've got four or five medications right out of the box. And again, what are we dealing with to go after the proper thing? And I think working with the medical doctor in the sense of, can we start putting some of these things in, start noticing what happens with the blood pressure? And that's the time to really keep on looking at the blood pressure. Is it starting to drop?
So one of the cool things I think about what we do is where you would think, since we don't do a lot of, we don't can't write the scripts for medications as well too, is we're basically going, no, don't take any drugs, but we want to make sure that we've got everything going well. So when we come back, we're going to find out who and why you should be attending this Wednesday night's lecture with Dr. Lamb, talking about natural approaches to blood pressure. And we'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to Dr. Tom Rizzo Live.
News Talk 105.9.
WMAL.
And welcome to Dr. Tom Rizzo Live. We are back in studio, sort of, but we're live here listening for any of your questions and essentially getting ready for this Wednesday's presentation on April the 20th at 7 p.m. at the Rizzo Center for Healing in Fairfax, Virginia, right off the Beltway. And this presentation is going to be with my co-host of today, Dr. Scott Lamb, and he's going to be talking about natural approaches to high blood pressure. I'm expecting, like always, it's going to be a packed one, like when Dr. Rizzo and Dr. Lamb have done their presentations in the past, just like talking about, I think the biggest one you've ever had was the public enemy number one, sugar.
The sugar,
lecture.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So this kind of has ties into that as well, too. Where does the sugar go? It goes into the bloodstream. So, but if you're ready for this particular high blood pressure lecture, you're going to have to register to make sure you've saved your seat. There's two ways you can do that. You can register online going to rosellecare.com, RoselleCare.com. Halfway down the page, you'll see a little button that says register, and it'll get some brief information from you, and then someone will contact you to confirm that we have your spot saved. And you can also call the office, too, and if you need to get a hold of Dr. Lamp or any of the other doctors, that's the great way to get a hold of us as well. But you can call the office at 703-698-7117. Again, that's 703-698-7117. Dr. Lamp, who should be attending your lecture on Wednesday night, and what will you be covering that is something new and different that they definitely can't miss?
I think pretty much the whole population, it's going to be beneficial on some of these things we're talking about, because it's going to be micronutrients that you need to have that to be in the body. And that starts, a lot of this disease and plaquing stuff can even start as early as the 18s to 20s. They find that in like Vietnam and some of the post-mortem workup on some of these people and unfortunate soldiers that died, and they saw, you know, arteriosclerosis already happening in the arteries. So that would be something to take a look at. Also, we'll cover exercises and the 1 minute exercise to see how well your heart is doing. If you're healthy enough to do that, we'll think about looking at the micronutrients that are needed, vitamin D, K, E, CoQ10, why the purposes of those are. Is there an effect of intermittent fasting associated with this? Is there a calcium connection associated with this? Deep breathing and how to do it appropriately. We'll go through that in the class itself and have to practice it. Cognitive behavioral therapies and why they're so important about how they kind of work and settle the body down. That's part of the breathing elements. Exercise in the different forms and things like grounding, just like grounding and walking barefoot and the electrical fields that are associated with the earth and how that affects our blood flow. Some interesting things that can be done there that you can do on your own and be your own health advocate. I'll end this with, you know, one of the things that happened with me, and I find it was personally for me, is my father, who had a stroke back in probably around 2008. I had him for about 6 years to take care of him in a assisted living facility. He was a heavy smoker and drinker. We stopped all that. got him on an aspect of a really good sugar-free diet, had him actually take certain vitamins and supplementations. And underneath my care, I don't think I have had a diastolic blood pressure over 140 or a systolic blood pressure over 140 or diastolic over 90. And he never had a sugar problem, or they kept on telling him he's going to be diabetic and he's going to have high blood pressure problems. So you can't control it. I saw it. I visually took it to, personally took care of it for my father. The only thing eventually he passed away from was an aspiration, because he would eat very fast and he would actually get caught up in the food. But it just shows us a prime example.
So obviously there's going to be a lot covered on this Wednesday's lecture. We need you to all register in advance, and we hopefully will see you there as well too. Thank you, Dr. Lamp, for joining me today.
Thank you.
And we are going to go outside and enjoy the sunshine now. Dr. Rosell will be back next week, and Dr. Lamp's probably heading to a blue zone. So we will see you then. Thanks for listening.